Matt Stansberry is in our studio. He fronts a nine-piece Oklahoma City rock and roll band influenced by blues, R&B, soul, and funk called Matt Stansberry and the Romance. He also has his own solo career under his name, Matt Stansberry. Last month, he released two albums, one solo acoustic rock album called Past Heartache, Present Hope, and his band's third full-length album, Future Love. Together, of course, they're billed as Past Heartache, Present Hope, Future Love. I love that.
Thanks.
Welcome, Matt.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you started Matt Stansberry and the Romance back in 2012, I believe.
Correct. Yep.
It's a large band, 10-piece originally, now a 9-piece. I think at one point it even swelled to 11.
Yeah, so. We've had 11, maybe 12. At some point we've had different iterations of it slightly here and there. And really the goal's just been to have just some really amazing musicians be a part of this group, and the best that we can assemble at any time. And that's what we've been able to do, luckily, for the last 5 years. It's been pretty awesome.
Well, I'm interested in kind of how you get to that point initially, because when most people think of starting a band, they think kind of that solid four-piece format, and then it just keeps on swelling from there. How do you get to the point? What's the thought in forming such a large band?
So, I didn't set out to form a big band. I wanted to have a big record. And I mean big meaning like other things on the record. So we were going to do another solo record. I did a solo record in 2009 at Blackwatch with Jared Evans. And didn't do a whole lot with that record, but I wanted to do something else. And I wanted to kind of change it up and just really kind of embrace my style even more. And I just really thought, and I've done stuff with horns in the past here and there. I've done stuff with other vocals. So it was nothing was totally new that I hadn't done before. It was just assembled differently. So the record is really what started the whole thing, that Let's Brighten It Up EP that we did. And so from there, it was like, okay, we're going to release this thing. I didn't think we were really going to do anything with it. It didn't have like the Romance name or anything. It was just, okay, what is this thing going to be? And then everybody that recorded on it was like, if you do this thing live, let's do it. And so before we released it, I was like, well, this needs to have like a band name then. It needs to be, but I still wanted to use the equity I had with my own stuff. So it just kind of ended up becoming this thing. So it was never really, it was kind of like all serendipitous, I guess. It wasn't really set out to be like, let's just keep adding stuff, you know. Now I kind of think that way. But at the time, I really did jump from doing 4 or 5-piece bands to 10. We just doubled it like overnight.
Yeah.
So by the time I played shows, I just stopped playing shows for 6 months to a year at least. I wasn't playing anything. And then when I came back out, it was with Suits and a 10-piece band. Sort of overnight, it felt like. So, yeah, that was a really fun process. But I think the turning point for me was talking to the girls. It was Shonda and Myra. And Shonda was like, hey, you know, I'd be into this. And I think Myra would too. And when they said that, I was like, oh, like they'll play. That was the turning point for me, because I figured I could probably get horns. But to have the singers at their caliber was really tough. And I thought they were just going to come in and do a studio thing and be like, see you later. So that was when I really took it serious, is when they said they'd be into it.
Gotcha. How hard is it to get 9 people on the same page and to and from gigs and practices and all that kind of stuff, arranging everybody's schedules?
We just kind of have a routine now. Like it actually seems like it's really, really hard. And sometimes it is. There's moments where it's like, what are we doing with this many people? But I would say most of the time it actually is, we just kind of got our system down. We have a system in place for, you know, it has kind of a core cast, but it's also, we're bringing in different musicians at different times. And there's always sort of, it always stays true to the sound that it's supposed to do. I think we've created that template. So we just have a system in place to always have great musicians show up and play. We'll show up in St. Louis, and we'll have musicians in St. Louis play with this, and it sounds like we've been playing years together. We've been able to kind of create a thing that is, I haven't had that before with anything else I've done, but for whatever reason, this thing that we've done it's kind of transferable.
Sure. You guys definitely have a couple of contemporaries that I can think of off the top of my head, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, JD McPherson, kind of along the same lines.
For sure.
All three of you seem to kind of appeal to fans of all ages. Tell me a little bit about why you think that is, if you've thought about that at all.
And, oh, yeah, for sure. Then there's a whole bunch of bands. I think Fits and the Tantrums started there, and they've kind of moved more more contemporary sounding. They've kind of, with some of their pop hits, but there's Raphael Sadiq and Mayor Hawthorne, and Alan Stone kind of goes into that bucket a little bit, and a little bit of Gary Clark Jr. maybe even in there. Alabama Shakes. I could go on and on. There's a lot of bands in that genre, but specifically the ones you're mentioning, I think we're probably closest to, which would be JD and St. Paul. I think there's just a throwbackness to it that I just think it's appealing, and I think partly there's like this baby boomer generation that they grew up with that, and they like to hear new interpretations of it. And we're not just, I would say St. Paul and JD and hopefully us too, we're not just straight copying anybody. We're just influenced by some really classic ways of doing stuff. And I don't see it as us trying to like hold music back. I just think we're taking those qualities and those things that we really enjoyed about it and just doing our thing with it. Because I think sometimes there's a misconception that we're trying to go backwards and with music. And I still think we're able to propel it forward just with a lot of classic elements to it. And so I think, and I would say in addition to just different, I'd say it's a pretty broad audience from ages, but also different ethnicities and everything. I mean, we have all sorts of unique people at our shows. And I know JD and St. Paul are be in the same boat. I actually saw both those guys together in Kansas City.
Oh yeah.
It was both of them playing the same night, which was awesome. Really, really good night. Two of my favorite current bands. But yeah, I think there's that part for the older group, but I think the younger group, they didn't live through it. So it's like, it feels really fresh. Like, oh, what's this kind of like throwback thing? They didn't listen to those records.
Sure.
And I would say I'm in that boat.
Right.
You know, I didn't really start even listening to like vinyl records till recently, you know, the last few years. So, I think it's kind of interesting like that. And I think it's safe for everybody to enjoy. We're not doing anything that's like edgy or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure, but you're pushing forward a sound that is familiar to older folks and, you know, introducing younger folks to it as well. It's funny you're talking about how you're not just copying somebody necessarily, but maybe taking elements of what they did and pushing it forward. You know, it's funny because I would say one of the artists that you guys kind of throw back to a little bit is Chuck Berry, and he used to do that. Even with his own music, he was taking old guitar licks from country songs and pushing it forward to appeal to a white audience and a black audience at the same time. So
totally. He was brilliant at that.
Yeah.
Brilliant at that. No, well, I think that's awesome. Yeah. So every now and then somebody will say something about Chuck Berry. I think he's kind of untouchable, and I'd never compare me or us to him, but I like, so that means a lot to hear that.
Yeah. We're talking with Matt Stansberry of Matt Stansberry and the Romance. Matt, your brother Joe is in the band too, and I know you have other musicians in your family. How was being surrounded by music early on? How did that inform you growing up?
It definitely did. I didn't realize it for a long time. So I didn't pick up a guitar till I was, even though I was around it growing up. I mean, I remember my parents had a band in the basement, and they would play, and it was a country band, and my grandfather would play fiddle in it. My dad and mom were in it together. They would do all the vocals.
What was the name of the band? I'm curious.
I think they called it Southern Nights or something. I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to circle back around to you.
Off the song lyric.
All right.
Off that song. I think that's what it was. My dad's probably listening going like, I don't think it was named after my dad at the time. I thought they had a band. I think they had a band name. And I may have made up Southern Nights, but I think that's what it was. Which is funny that I don't remember that. And we were in Elk City, and they would travel into Oklahoma City and play at Crystal's Pizza. And I was just excited because we'd get free refills on the drinks all night long and pizza and stuff. So we were like acting up and acting a fool, you know, while they're playing music. So yeah, it was not until late middle school that I even got remotely interested. But then when I did get interested, I felt like it was on my own terms. What my parents saying, here's an inch. I really got into it. And I work more with my family now on music than I did for a long time. I mean, my brother have always done it, but like I even work now with music with my dad. I was on the way to this interview, I was talking with my dad about a new song he's working on that he was asking me to produce for him. And we were talking about references and what ideas he wants to do. And my dad he writes really, really good songs. He's always been a good writer. And I kind of took that for granted growing up too, because I'd hear songs that he'd play. I thought everybody knew him. And I was like, oh, it's my dad's song? Because he'd mix them in with playing like a Glenn Campbell song or a John Denver song, and then he'd mix his own song. I couldn't tell the difference. So the quality always felt good to me. So the songwriting thing runs in our family. So I got that from him, and my brother did too. My brother's an awesome writer. And I think he has some music he's working on. So It's just, yeah, it's looking, you know, I'm to an age now I can look back, you know, and just look at all this stuff from my early years and really appreciate it. I didn't at the time, I'll just be honest. I mean, I didn't think about it. I took it for granted probably.
Just kind of seeped in there without you knowing it, right?
Exactly. In a big way.
Sure, yeah. Well, earlier this year, I know you were on a PBS show, Sun Studio Sessions. I believe you probably recorded it last year.
Yeah.
Aired across the country, and obviously in a historic place, a legendary place that all these, probably a lot of sounds that you're influenced by with mm-hmm. what you're doing currently were created. What was it like being in that space, one, and recording there, and then also getting a little TV spot after out of it, too?
Yeah, so the cool thing is it kind of happened just like it does in the old days. So we showed up to – we were playing a show on Beale Street in Memphis, like the first time we ever played in Memphis with the Romance. And we went to go tour Sun Studio. It was John Fletcher, trombone player. It was his idea. We went to go see it. We weren't going to tour it. We went to go see it. We're about to leave to go have lunch and have barbecue, and we were all real hungry. And they said, hey, are you guys a band? We're like, yeah. They give us a CD, and we'll give you a free tour. And it was kind of late, so we almost turned it down. We were like, no, this is like a one-time thing. This is like birthplace of rock and roll. Let's go see this tour. So we went through, had goosebumps the whole time, learned a lot of stuff I didn't know, surprisingly. Knew some of the big stuff. I knew that's where Elvis got to start and Johnny Cash. And if you ever watch Walk the Line, it's like, I think that was a really great movie for re-educating people on that studio. So we get to the end of the tour though, and it's in the recording room, because it's really Sun. People call it Sun Studios, but it's Sun Studio. There's one studio. It's just one room, and it's not very big. And so we're in there, and we're the last group in. I mean, even within our group, everybody had already peeled off and left, and we were sitting there taking pictures with this, you know, the Elvis microphone thing. And this guy comes in, he goes, are you guys the band? And we're like, I don't know, we're a band. He was like, are you the band we're listening to in the lobby right now? And we're like, I mean, we just gave you a CD. I mean, I don't know if that's it or not. And he was like, no, you guys did. We opened it, we put it on. He was like, I really want you guys to record here. And we're like, really? Like, because we were at the very end of the tour, we were like elbowing each other because they said they still do sessions there. And we're like, yeah, we'll record here. And like, ha, 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 and laughed it off. And then before we're even out of the room, this guy, you know, it's old school style. You know, I just think it's kind of like, yeah, we want you to record here. And so anyway, that same day he said, hey, we want you to come back. I'm going to talk to the PBS guys. They do a Sun Studio session here. I'd love to have you guys do that. Maybe we'll do two nights, one night for you just record what you want. And then one night we'll do this PBS thing. And, you know, a few months later, we're in there recording that deal. And it's, you get that feeling all over again. It's kind of like that we're not worthy feeling a little, you know, not a little bit, a lot. You're like, I mean, it's super fun until it gets serious and you start recording and you're like, there's this sort of, I don't know, there's like a respect kind of thing really. So, but it was an amazing experience. The guys there, you know, there's still magic in that room all these years later. And I think a lot of it's the people that are there right now are very passionate. There's a guy named Ples Hampton, and his background, his dad, he grew up around recording at Ardent, recording all these greats. His dad, you know, helped put Jim Blossoms on the map and a bunch of different bands. And so he's like the historian right now on Sun Studio. He's an expert on that, and also just on Ardent and the whole Memphis music scene. And he's the one that embraced us and brought us in. And so, but he's an incredible person.
Well, I know you mentioned Memphis and going there and touring there first. Your band seems to have a lot of success in some of these regional cities around Kansas City, St. Louis, and I know we were talking a little bit off air. It kind of goes hand in hand with a question I asked earlier about getting nine people to and fro, but it seems like a barrier for a lot of bands to break out of their own elements and their own comfort zones.
For sure.
What is it that not only broke you out of that and made you want to try that, but kept you going back?
I think part of it, we knew as a nine-person band, there's a couple of factors. We knew we couldn't oversaturate our hometown and just play all the time and be expected. And I think over time, what could have been good turnout shows, I think, would have diminished pretty quickly. And I think we knew that. And the second piece is, I think we believe, and did at the time and still do, even maybe even more so, with what we're trying to do with music and our music particularly. And we feel like there's a bigger audience that still doesn't know who we are, what we're doing. And so it's our job to take it out there. People aren't going to say, always even invite you or whatever. And you don't have to force your way in, but you just have to be available and to make it happen. And so I think we made a conscious effort to take our music to people and not just wait for them to come and find us and show up in Oklahoma City. But I will say, if we can do it, I think any band can if they want to make it a focus of getting out. But I think it's helped our shows here. It's helped make our shows bigger by being able to make them more special and unique when we do them. And we've just found a lot of – we've made a lot of new friends and just found a lot of people that believe in what we're doing that have helped propel us forward. And so they become our biggest advocates. There's a guy, Bud Jostis in St. Louis, who adopted us early on. And I was telling you about this. I mean, we played one time, and we thought, I don't know if we'll be able to go back here again. And he was already working with us before we even got home that same night on how we can get us back. And people like that, they embrace you, and they make you believe that, oh, this is possible. Well, let's take that same risk in San Antonio. And the same thing, we have this guy Marcos in San Antonio, and he's worked with us the same way so that we can make it sustainable to be able to do it and not just go out and lose tons of money and break the band up. I mean, it's like there's people that believe in it just as much as we do. And I know that can be anybody's story, you know, like bands getting out there. I'd love to see more bands from Oklahoma City get out more and play more shows and see the same things happen to them, you know?
Sure. Well, tell me a little bit about the band's live show and what folks can expect from a 9-piece and this big kind of rock and roll show.
Yeah. So when we first started, it was a bunch of really good musicians in a band that would just kind of run the music down. And probably for the first few years, over the last, I would say 6 months to year, we've really focused on going like, this is the show business and let's really put a show together. So everybody's kind of coming more into their own. And we have a lot of influences. I look a ton at like Springsteen because he has, it's mm-hmm. Bruce and the E Street Band. It's kind of like Matt in the Room. Like try to see what they do that creates this magic that people want to see with the live show. So we're starting to really focus on that over the last year, and everybody's coming to their own as performers and not just musicians. And so I think that's been the big thing for us in the last, I'd say even really last 3 months, is like, it's really is more of a show now. Everybody really performs. And I think a few performers were holding back a little bit because they didn't want to overpower everybody else. So it was kind of like few of us, me included, that just want to play music had to go, okay, I've got to really connect with the crowd. And so our show has become a lot more exciting, and the horns are featured, and Myra goes crazy, and my brother goes crazy. It's a lot fun.
His name is Matt Stansbury. He fronts a 9-piece Oklahoma City rock and roll band called Matt Stansbury and the Romance. They have a dual album out, I guess, dual albums.
Yeah.
One solo album called Past Heartache, Present Hope, and one full-length album from Matt Stansbury and the Romance called Future Love. Again, together, it's Past Heartache, Present Hope, and Future Love. Available wherever you get your music. Thanks for coming by, Mac.
Thanks. Happy to be here.